Boom, what up? Hello, bonjour, and hola, real leaders. This is Kevin Edwards, your host here, and I am so excited you're tuning in to one of our amazing experiences. What you're about to hear is going to be fresh, real, and loaded with inspiration, guaranteed to support your impact journey. So sit back, enjoy the listen, folks, share a review afterward, and always keep it real. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and welcome everyone to this episode of the Real Leaders Podcast. We're back again with another episode. Alongside me today, we have Asad Mahmood, the founder and CEO of SEMA Funds. SEMA Funds is a Real Leaders top impact company in 2024. It ranks these companies based on their intention, their model, their people, how they treat their people, their impact metrics, their transparency, and most importantly, their growth, their positive growth. As they continue to grow, they transform more lives. That's what we're here to talk about today, is impact. So please give a warm welcome to Mr. Asad Mahmood. Asad, my friend, how are we doing today?
I am good. Thank you very much, Kevin. It's nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk with you as well, sir. We were just chatting a little bit before the program today. I think there's going to be a fun conversation. Maybe a good place to start here for the audience is just a little background on yourself. For those of the folks listening to this who do not know who you are, who SEMA Funds is, please give them just a brief explanation of the work you're doing.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity. And it's great to be a part of the Real Leaders Award, and the recognition helps us, motivates us. So I think I just want to ask for some forbearance as I talk about myself and pat myself on the back. You know, I always feel a bit odd, but I think it's part of what we have to do. So, you know, I have been doing this for more than about 25 years, and I have in some ways being a pioneer in this space, because this all started with microfinance, really. That's where it was. And the microfinance is sort of the mothership of what you call impact investing today. So it's certainly broadened, you know, it's not only in the area of microfinance, but housing and energy and agriculture and, you know, water and sanitation. So it's great to see the expansion and the growth of the sector clearly growing, but still a long way from where we would like to see. If you look at my 25-year track record, starting as a managing director for Deutsche Bank, where I headed the global social investment funds, I was there for more than 20 years or about on the international side, working with Gary Hatem, who was a very nice man, who sort of was, did the community development work, but he, you know, was very innovative and interested. And if you were to ask me for my sort of who I am, so I would say I'm a innovator, and I like to work on building the field. So like the first code of conduct or the client protection principle, which was the code of conduct or the client, the consumer protection principles that were written for microfinance, you know, are written by myself and a guy by the name of Ajit at Deutsche Bank. We are innovators. And if you look at the types of structures that we have done, because my background before I joined this sort of, social investment group at Deutsche, I was in the derivatives area. So, you know, I'm an engineer by background. So mathematics and modeling and things of that nature are sort of, you know, I'm familiar with them. And so we have created, you know, a lot of interesting structure. As a matter of fact, we are doing a very interesting structure right now, which I can go into later. But as to for me, I'm an engineer by training, and I'm originally from Pakistan, and I've been here in the US for about 40 years. It doesn't seem like it, but I've been. I'm proud to be an American. I'm not proud of our government in particular, but I think I'm proud of the spirit of the American people. I'm proud of our Constitution. And I think we could use political reforms on both sides of the table. I think they're pretty much the same. So that's who I am.
Love it. Well, hey, I think that's a great explanation. And thanks for going into those details, but not too much today, of course. Want to avoid the political nonsense that's out there. Yeah. Let's focus on this background, though, Asad. You're talking a little bit about one of the reasons actually Real Leaders started, which was an article titled Banker to the Poor, written by Muhammad Yunus, okay? Grandfather of microfinance. Now, this, to me, is just capitalism using it as a tool to help others grow in prosperity. Now it is considered impact investing. So my question to you is, what do you define impact investing as?
Right. That's a you know, not an easy question, Kevin. And I think you know, there is there are two functions and you know, sort of impact investing that we try to maximize. One is the return to the investors and also the social impact. Otherwise, we are no different than any other investors. You know, if you make a bar at the corner of the street, I would call it an impact investment because people come in and meet and then they, you know, they create the next generation. So what greater impact can you have? So there are sort of, you know, the intentionality is a very important part of it. When you have two functions, I don't know if you remember your basic algebra or calculus, and you try to maximize them, right? Then there is a point where the, you know, the social benefits versus the, there's a point of intersection. After that point, you know, you start to, if you just focus on money, then you start to diminish the social side of it. And if you just start to focus on the social side, then it is, you know, becomes more philanthropy rather than impact investing. So for us, impact investing is really, you know, sort of, it's not a maximization of profit, but it's balancing to provide the best return because, you know, people have fiduciary assets and, you know, to push the envelope, you know, to do, you know, the field of impact investing really is very new. Even microfinance, you know, is Dr. Yunus. And by the way, I have a great love for Dr. Yunus, but he was not the founder of microfinance. He was a great communicator. Mm. And he understood the Western mindset because he was married to an American woman for a long time. And so he, you know, dressed in the local Bangladeshi outfits and you know, he was able to communicate beautifully. He's a smart guy, really, and very socially interested guy. So, you know, the element of microfinance was really, there was a lot of cooperative movements prior to microfinance that were trying to do something similar to this, right? That was happening. And there were several names out of Southeast Asia. Akhtar Hamid Khan was a pioneer in this space. And Dr. Yunus visited his work in Comilla, Bangladesh, and he was influenced. We are all influenced. I'm not criticizing Dr. Yunus. I'm just saying that people don't know that was not Dr. Yunus that came up with this idea. He reformed it. He added to it. He brought it to limelight. He was a great communicator. But, you know, that the history of this was also in Latin America. You know, there was a cooperative movement that Acción was involved in early on. So, I think for us, the definition of impact investing is a little bit broader. And we don't believe that there is the impact first or the finance first. That doesn't fit with my idea of these two functions, you know, maximizing two functions that intersect. So for us, really, the ideal state of impact investing is, it is when you see a business opportunity in something that has social value or needs a social need. To me, that is impact investing. For example, I'll give you an example. Affordable housing. Affordable housing is a tremendous need throughout the developing world. There is no mortgage markets. And where there is, the bankers, they tend to lend to the, you know, richest neighborhood. For example, in Kenya, about 50 million roughly population, and there are about 20,000 mortgages. Think about it. You know, who doesn't want a house? Now, there's a real business opportunity, you know, and you know, housing has deep impact in terms of wealth creation, in terms of the you know, effects on, you know, construction, furniture, everything. So it has economic impact, it's an impact on stability of the people, it's an impact on increasing their wealth. They're giving 40% of their wealth in rent, right? So for us, impact investing is a more wholesome. It is not one singular thing. It's like the DNA, they are wrapped together, you know, like the DNA. You can't just say, I'm going to work with one strand and that's impact investing for me. That is not. That is just what, you know, commercial activities, nothing wrong. You know, everything you do, every investment you make, except for weapons and things like that, you know, and even then, you know, you have some crazy loonies that you have to protect yourself against, but has an impact. You know, so the idea here for us is that it has to have intentionality. It has to have, you know, sort of, the dual functionality of financial return and a social impact. So I'll leave it there. I mean, there's a lot more to discuss, but I know we have limited time here.
Well, I like that. And I think, you know, impact at the end of the day, it's providing something that otherwise wouldn't be there, right? It's filling that gap that you talk about.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a bank or an institutional lender, you know, you're raising money on an interest rate at 6%, and you've got to get in at least 7% back, right? To keep and stay in business. So yeah, I get the risk aspect of that and kind of how this, you know, community has formed, because there is a gap, right? Or else we wouldn't be focusing on this. And we need to, in order to grow as a society, improve stakeholders, improve the whole stakeholder mindset. There needs to be organizations like you. Now, question for you is, who are the investors that see the value in this as well? Who are the investors that have worked with you over time that want to focus on their investments here because the return is all good, but it's also driving, it's also filling the gap we just talked about.
Right. I think there are a couple of things that I want to talk about in your question. You talk about mindset, right? That's the first question. I think that's the most important element. And human civilization has only progressed when we change our mindsets. I'll give you an example. In 1920, women couldn't vote. It was not that in 21 they became smarter. We changed our mindset. Similarly on slavery. You know, we justified it through the Bible. Literally, crazy. And then, you know, we changed. So the idea of our consciousness, you know, where 15,000, you know, it's all you're hearing this current Middle Eastern challenges and Ukrainian challenges, but 15,000 kids die every day, and 800 women, I think, of curable, of, you know, things that we can do to prevent, you know. So our consciousness has to evolve. If we are going to change the status quo, what is, then we have to change our consciousness, our moral consciousness, where, you know, war and sort of propaganda and lies and bigotry, all those things. And then maybe I am too idealistic. You know, I am an idealistic guy. But, you know, I want to work towards the idealism of, justice for all, freedom of speech, you know, the great idealists that Jefferson and all those people put together. So that element of it is very important. Now, the second element of your question was, remind me, sorry,
Now that you've explained that, are the investors that are working with you and investing, are they values aligned?
Right. So, you know, look, everything starts with crazy people, right? That's Margaret Mead, you know, the anthropologist who says that it's only a few, I'm paraphrasing, that changed the world. So this impact investing side, which was really the mothership of which was microfinance, started with some individuals. They were mostly social scientists. In the beginning, they didn't even call their bottom line profit. You know, they used to call it, net assets is the word that was used. They were social scientists. And from there, it started to get credence. You know, what happens is that you have these few innovators, if you want to call them crazy, that's a good word for it. They started, then you saw credence by people like Deutsche Bank and others who take an interest in it and want to do it for their corporate social responsibility. Clearly, you know, a lot of greenwashing there. But that, you know, money is green. You know, you work Deutsche Bank's interest in this, my work, was totally out of, sort of greenwashing, you know, or to sort of CSR function. They were never serious about it. That's where they are. You've seen the history of Deutsche Bank. So I think, you know, that element of, acceptability makes it, right? So you build on it, you know, it's not perfect, but you take the green money that comes out of corporate social responsibility and do interesting things out of it. And that gives credibility, right? And then, you know, you have a tide of all of the people coming to it. And it's, you know, a lot of, I think, conversation. So what we are seeing, the investors that are still fundamentally important to the sector are development banks. They are the ones. You know, and if you look at even larger fund manager, we are a small fund manager, responsibility, others, at least I think 60% of their money, if not 70%, it comes from development bank, and we may have reduced a bit. So the development banks are the real most important part of impact investing. And then I think I would say, you know, foundations, and then I think, you know, people like MetLife, people that are the pension fund of the Episcopal Church. They are the pension funds of churches, Westpath, those have been important, Investor Church of England and others who are, you know, sort of coming into it, but still seeking too high returns for what we can bear, because every dollar that you take from it ultimately comes from somebody at the bottom of the pyramid, right? So there's a balancing act here. Then you have, you know, sort of the CSR type of investors, and that's okay. I don't poo-poo that CSR investor. I think that's part of the development equation. And then I think, you know, for us, you ask who are the investors. I think ultimately the biggest investors are the retail investors, mom and pop. If you look at U.S. philanthropy, right? You look at what the total large foundation like Ford, Rockefeller, MacArthur and all that, Annie Casey and all that. You look at that, I don't have the numbers completely correct, so don't quote me, but they're about, I think, roughly around $50 billion or so. But individual giving is more than $250 billion. So who's bigger, right? So that individual consciousness and sort of creating the environment. And that's what we are working on. We have for the first time in the US, internet-based platform called Sowgood, S-O-W, like to sow a seed, and Sowgood, that would allow retail investors to invest small, a couple of hundred dollars and get a return. The first offering, 7.5% return in a very good company called Sun King that has more than $100 million in revenue. And a portion of that is guaranteed or protected by USAID and people like that. So that element of, you know, who are the investors? You know, it's a section of, individual invest, high net worth, rich people, the crazies, the pioneers. Then it's the, you know, CSR investors. Then it is the pension fund of the churches. Then it is now, you know, it's becoming increasingly, as the scale is increasing, that the pressure, that's very important. In the US, there is something called the Community Reinvestment Act. And I worked on that element as well while I was working with Gary. That forces banks to do things that they normally wouldn't do, right? They didn't. They used blackline. You know, blacklining was redlining or whatever you call it. They would not lend in poor neighborhoods. And the idea of the Community Reinvestment Act is that if you're going to take deposits from poor neighborhood, you have to invest that money back into those areas. And there was some fantastic ideas. I think it was in the 70s, there was an analysis done of mortgage lending, and that Community Reinvestment Act came out of that. You know, so that element of it is also, you know, very important to have some both a carrot and also a stick, because people don't come. You can go to so many conferences that you can spend a lifetime talking about it. I know they're all, majority of them are talk shops, but you know, the actual reality of investments, unless you want to rebrand them, right? There's a lot of resegmentation, remarketing of traditional products and calling them impact investing. And that's that, you know, like I said, every investment has value. I'm not sort of saying it, but it is not what, in my view, is impact investing in that sense. So I think that may sum up my views on who are the investors.
Yeah, it's helpful. You know, it's a very broad answer. There's lots of different types of ways to make an impact with your investment. You also touched on the tailwinds and the headwinds, I'd say, of what's driving this forward. You know, pointing to tension or pressure on society, and talking about the large mass of individuals, this new wave of consciousness that's coming, you know, get with the times, move with the future. This is where we're going. And if you're behind,
especially from younger people,
and
people
if you want to make a long-term investment, you know, let's think about the future. So I get all that. Now let's talk about what's happening this year in the past couple of years. Obviously, you know, interest rates weren't where they were 20 years ago at 17-19%, but now they've gone up a little bit. How is that impacting like your firm and like the firms in the community to get the capital you need to deploy?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think we were doing a fund. We just closed one of the largest fund in commercial and industrial solar.
Congrats.
Thank you. It took a long time, unnecessary, really. It took more than 2 years. And I don't think any private sector investor takes that long. So there are issues of efficiency. And, you know, as I say, if you want to change developments, you have to change the instruments of development. So there needs to be some progress, some reform, some, you know, thinking and some, you know, sort of doing all that is. The interest rates, you know, are an important element of this, right? I mean, because, you know, if you are going to a pension fund of a church, they have a fiduciary obligation, you know, to make the returns that are market comparable. You know, and then, you know, that's what I have to do. And when you have, so when we did this, it was a green bond. It was called the CMA, CNI Solar Green Bond. It was, and I started, you know, it's been a long time since the working, it was a fixed rate bond. But because of the rise in interest rate, we had to switch it to a floating rate bond. And because there's an inverted yield curve, you can see that in the longer horizon, interest rates would come down. So the borrowers were also understanding that. And, you know, the element of interest rate really, you know, is an important factor in terms of making it viable for these borrowers, you know, the actual people who are on the front lines, and making it attractive for the fiduciary investors. So that is a very important element, right? So
Certainly.
It's created some challenges.
Certainly. And for the viewers at home, could you describe, just maybe share an investment that's generated great return in an area that I guess the end result would be economic development?
Right. So I think, you know, in the like that solar fund, right? The one, I can just give you example of the latest things. And that, and now the returns are not double digit. You know, it's not like 12% returns, but they are close to 8-9% in some of the, you know, earlier tranches. You know, even in the super senior tranche, which has about a, you know, I think 60% first loss, you're not going to lose money. None of my colleagues or asset managers have ever lost that amount of money, or not even close to it. You know, that way, like 6-7% return, which is, I think, reasonable. You know, there are investment on the equity side that can yield much greater returns. You know, we are the only fund manager really that has also operating companies, because, you know, it's always a challenge to find good people to invest with. So we created an affordable mortgage company in Pakistan. And, you know, Pakistan's gone through a very difficult time. political crisis and, you know, regime change and all that, just total devastation of the country. Interest rates went from 8% to 21%, you know, it's just, but that, you know, the model that we had when we created it, you were able to get about 5 times your investment in about 7 years. Now, come on, that's a pretty damn good return, you know. So there are elements like that on the equity side that can provide you. You know, the risks are, of course, higher. You know, it's a matter of how high, you know, you can't sit on the super senior tranche and expect to 5 times your capital. You have to take the risk to do it. So I think for me, you know, on the debt side, because mostly we are a debt investor, you know, the returns are in that range, anywhere from like 6 to 9%, but depending on the tranching. But there are other investors. You know, I know that some of the churches, pension funds, and others like the Church of England, their benchmark is they want to invest only in fixed income, not on equity. It's 10% return. So, and I don't know where they're getting it, but they are certainly getting it. And, you know, maybe I need to re-examine where I'm investing and what I'm calling impact investing.
Yeah, it's an interesting question to think about. I think it's always interesting to just take a step back and just see where we are as human beings. I mean, you think about how capitalism has evolved over time. I mean, speaking of the church, like churches, they used to not allow banking in the areas that they governed. And that's actually why the Medici Bank formed, is they could do that in that area. So it's just, you know, to see where we've come, obviously, since the double ledger and kind of how financing has evolved. When you think about that, I mean, you keep talking about visionary, the risk takers, the crazy ones who are taking these risks. Do you, like, where do you see this capitalism kind of evolving to? What does it look like to you in another, you know, few years?
Like I said, Kevin, without the political will, without the change in mindset, we are just going to be, you know, dancing around the outskirts and putting band-aids on the situation. You know, look, think about the migrant crisis. Why are people, you know, why do people want to leave their families and sit in rubber boats across the vast ocean where your death is probably 70% assured? You know, so the crisis in the world is really fundamental in nature. It has a lot of political aspect. It has a lot of neo-colonialistic aspects. But unless those elements are, we get serious about development and to sort of take that into account, I think the scale of it will remain. So I think those fundamental changes, you know, will have to come about. Everybody, you know, that now, you know, the new politically appointed head of the World Bank, Mr. Banga. You know, and everybody talks about reform of development banks because these institutions have been, you know, for a long time and they've done a lot of good and great people. Like the people, I can't, you know, sort of say that the people are the issue. The issue is the system, the bureaucracy, the drive, you know, how they're governed. And those are important elements, you know, to reform, to really release the amount of capital that is necessary. You know, and the corruption, you know, which is perpetuated. I'll tell you a story because I think this is important for the audience to hear. So I was going through a due diligence with a European bank for investment. And they said, oh, you know, everybody's corrupt. And I said, yeah, sure. Yeah, there is corruption. But where do the despots and where do these criminals take their money to? Where do they take it? Where do they put it? In Swiss bank accounts, in, you know, hidden accounts. So it is, the problem is, yes, there is corruption, but there is enabling of corruption because of political it's expeditious to just have the thug there because he just does it. And, you know, it's the best of the evil. And that, you know, the idealism of our country, of you know, democracy and freedom and all that is set aside for short-term stability, which doesn't bring short stability in the longer run. So I think for us, really, if you talk about where we are going in the next a couple of years, I think we'll continue to do, because I've been doing this for 25 years and I've talked of impact investing is nothing new, right? I mean, there's been all lots of talks. But when you start to see the investments flow through, it, you know, it's a catch 22, you know? You can't make change without money, and you can't have money without, you know, having something to invest in a stable environment or relatively stable environment. So I think those elements, you know, will have to, unless we are willing to take those steps, we will see the situation in the world, you know, deteriorate with population growth, with climate issues, with all these things. And look around you as to what is happening in the world, not just in the Middle East, but look around, you know, see what the dynamics are. You know, NATO is holding the biggest military exercise tomorrow, this week, after, you know, the Cold War collapse. If you're going to shut your eyes and not see what is happening around the world, you know, you can, but there are consequences of this. You know, it's just a one misstep and you have, you know, Pakistan, you know, Iran and Pakistan. Pakistan is a nuclearly armed country, totally, you know, screwed up. So anyway, that's the bigger picture. I can give you a sweet answer that we're going to grow. And there is growth. I don't want to be, you know, sort of ignoring that there is growth, there's more awareness, there's broadening of the field. But if you want to go further than that, you know, and I speak from an idealistic point of view, you know, there are things that they are as they are. And but, you know, the desire is always, if people said, oh, slavery is okay, the things are where they are, and we're just going to live like that, then we would have never had the reforms and the challenges and a Black president, you know, all through the time and evolution. So that is what idealism about, is to think about things that are difficult and idealistic, but that's the beacon, that's the shining light for that shining city on the top of the mountain that Ronald Reagan talked about.
You know, if there's anything I'm gathering from this too, it's just the importance of a global perspective is so key to understanding the financial markets and what's going on and the power that the beholden power that is. You had mentioned earlier about the World Bank as the central instrument to development, yet being you know, elected by the U.S. Congress. Like, what do you think is a solution for, I guess, interests around the world to stop the patterns that have put us in the place where we are today?
Yeah, that's a good question. I just to reinforce what I'm saying, because you know, I don't want you to think I'm just a crazy loony guy. If the head of Citibank was appointed by Congress, would Citibank be Citibank? No, right? So if the idea of the head of the World Bank, you know, could be a person that grew up in World Bank, knew all the details and the failures of World Bank and the successes, wouldn't that be the right leader for this? You know what I'm saying? So that element is not there, you know. And then I have a lot of respect for Mr. Banga. He's a very, you know, capable and socially interested guy. He's been interested in this issue for a long time. But the reality of life is not very different, right, from what the idealism is. But just I wanted to make the point that what I'm speaking about is logical. You know,
yeah.
You can't expect that, you know, the head of General Motors is appointed by the Senate. It doesn't work that way. Or the head of Deutsche Bank established by the Bundestag. So I think that element of it, you know, is important. And I think...
Question for you.
Sure,
so would you go as far to say that, because that's how the Fed is structured. A lot of people think, you know, the Fed is a government agency. It's not. It's now that the president elects them, but it's not technically that a government agency. So, like, would you go as far to say the Fed should not be appointed by the U.S. president?
Yeah, that difficult question. And good ones. I think, look, I work for the Fed. So I know the Federal Reserve. And it's one of my best jobs was the Federal Reserve in terms of the folks and the, you know, what we had.
Nice.
And I think the Fed it's important for a democracy, right, that the Fed is independent. And that's yes. what we try to do. There has to be, you know, there are, I look, I'm not qualified to give you the idea, you know, that if the, it's Fed is different. Now, it's not, it has a different role, but the independence of decision making, then, you know, how do you choose? I don't know. I've never thought about how do you choose the next Fed sort of leadership, you know, just within, I guess, or through a council of people. Yeah, I mean, I think that could be relevant, but the independence of the Fed is critical, you know, because it, the politicians, you know, are politicians, right? It is, you know, there's greater interest for the people that are sometimes not in line with the short-term interests of the politicians.
Well, you know, a lot of this comes down to, as you put it earlier, you know, like conscious leadership and, you know, how we make decisions. And at the end of the day, it's a choice. It's a choice that you make for the long term. And there's a growing number of leaders out there starting to think about the decisions and choices they're making and how it's going to impact not just them, but seven generations down the line, yeah. where they can look their granddaughters in the face and say, hello, this is what I've done, when they ask the question. So my question to you, Asad, is when you think of like leadership in general, how do you kind of, what do you think is happening here in the impact movement in terms of conscious leadership? What is
that? You asked me very, you know, deep and difficult questions. But for me, as I, at least I can speak about myself and my thinking about what leadership is, you know, and Seema is sort of was a rebellion, really, against the, I worked for Citibank and Deutsche and large organization. They were totally dysfunctional. You know, the people who were making the decisions had no clue as to what was happening and things of that nature. Leadership comes when you have you know, the leader recognizing that his role is not on you know, to do everything, but to create an environment where entrepreneurship, where, you know, talent can rise, because any leader is as good as his people. You know, it's not, Seema is not successful because of Asad Mahmood. Yes, Asad Mahmood started with Michael Roundhorse. But it is really successful because of the smart people and the hardworking people we have. So we have created an environment which we, you know, we are a rebellion against the corporate structure, and I would say sort of a new generation of impact asset managers. And none of these asset managers, and I know them all, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years, and they're a good friend of mine. They don't have a transparent culture. We have a total transparent culture. Transparency in decision making, transparency in compensation, which is the biggest issue, right? What do you talk about? What's gossip about? You know, where's the money? Who's getting it? Who's not? You know, that. We eliminated that. We have 360 reviews. I go through 360 reviews, and, you know, that I'm a human being, you know, and I certainly have a lot of shortfalls. We have a written HR policy that says if you gossip, gossip is the most destructive for a corporate culture, right? Because especially when you have a culture of transparency, so that, you know, we can terminate employment because we don't want a culture of people backbiting, you know, especially go talk to them. So I think a leader is one that recognizes that his role is really to create the environment for other people to lead and to build the company. Yeah, he's sort of more of a cheerleader, you know, an enabler of the environment that people are working in, and to, you know, to do that. So I think that's what a real leader is, that has a vision, that has understands the realities, and still inspires to the ideals.
Well, Asad, you beat me to it. You already gave me your definition of a leader, and I think it was spot on. So I appreciate your time. Come on the podcast today. Time flew by today. And for anyone who's listening to this, you know, this is key insights that you really can't find anywhere else. Anyone who wants to get ahead of the futures, kind of see where things are going, What a great free resource to take advantage of. So Hassan, thank you so much for coming on the program today. Best of luck to you and Seema. Thanks for applying and winning another Realtors Top
Impact. Can I say one thing?
Go for it.
One thing. I am also working. I know I do a lot of field building activities. Like I said, I am trying to build an association of impact investing emerging, because you know large ones will get all the attention. I want to get the smaller ones, the more younger ones that are pushing them or more hungry, to form an association of emerging market impact investors. If you are interested in joining that association, we have a meeting coming up. You can just email me. It's very easy. Asad, A-S-A-D, at simafunds.com. And I'd be happy to talk to you, to guide you, to help you. Whatever I can do in my capacity, I will. But we have to do this together. You know, it's not going to be a singular silver bullet or single person that's going to solve the problem. Appreciate the work you are doing, Kevin. And I think that highlights the people's and certainly encourages us. So thank you for all that.
Of course, as they say, you know, you want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go with a group.
Yeah, I
love that analogy. So folks, you want to take advantage of that. One more time, Asad, your email address?
Asad, A-S-A-D. At SimaFunds, SimaFunds.com.
Fantastic for a sub mood. I'm Kevin Edwards, asking to go out there, empower others, and always keep it real. Thank you, Asad.
Bye bye. Have a nice day.
Hey, Realtors, thanks again for listening to this amazing episode. And if you're someone like me who goes all the way to the end just to make sure I can extract as much information, education, and inspiration out of every single interview, might I suggest you check out our magazine. If you go online to Realtors.com today, you're going to get the first 30 days for free, where you're going to be able to access all of our magazines, courses, and live events from some of the top thought leaders around the world. All you have to do is go online to realleaders.com and click the subscribe button in the top right corner to get your free 30-day trial right now. Again, that's real-leaders.com. Thanks again for being a Real Leader, and always keep it real.